Today, the U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments in a death penalty case that a former FBI director says is a prime example of the kind of error-filled trial that has undermined public confidence in the death penalty. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
Delma Banks has been on death row in Texas for 23 years. Last spring, he came within 10 minutes of execution. Jackie and Larry Whitehead, the parents of the 16-year-old boy Banks was convicted of killing, were at the Texas State Prison waiting to see their son's murderer die.
We were in the conference room waiting to be taken down to the viewing room, and the telephone rang.
Mrs. Whitehead had not come for the previous scheduled execution dates, but this one she thought was real.
It really bothered me for a while. Could I stand there and watch him do this? But the way that he would be executed is far more humane than what he did to my son. He was shot in the back of the head, and then he was shot between the eyes.
Jackie Whitehead says it was devastating when the Supreme Court stayed the execution at the last minute. But Delma Banks' case presents some important issues that defense lawyers contend test whether the high court is serious about enforcing the rules that it has laid down for capital cases. Indeed, in an unusual twist, a group of former prosecutors and judges, including former FBI Director William Sessions, has intervened in the case, telling the justices that the Banks case is, quote, tainted by errors in both the conviction and sentencing of the defendant. Those errors, said the Sessions group, are typical of those that have undermined public confidence in the fairness of the capital punishment system. The first of those alleged errors involves the long-established rule requiring prosecutors to turn over to defense counsel information that discredits a prosecution witness. And at the Banks trial, says defense lawyer George Kendall, the prosecution failed to do that with the two most important witnesses.
Not only did the government not do so, but both witnesses testified untruthfully before the jury. The prosecutors knew their testimony was not truthful. And instead of correcting those witnesses, as they're obligated to do, the prosecutors then got up in closing argument and assured the jury and the court and the defense that those witnesses had been completely and totally truthful.
Undoubtedly, the most important witness at the trial was a guy named Charles Cook, who testified that Banks had arrived at his home in Dallas the morning of the murder. Cook said that Banks, a 21-year-old African-American, confessed that he had murdered a white boy and asked Cook to get rid of the car he'd stolen from the victim and to hold on to his gun for him. Cook said he abandoned the car, which was never recovered. The gun was later recovered and identified as the murder weapon. On cross-examination, Cook was asked if he'd been rehearsed or coached in any way, and he said no. Defense lawyer George Kendall.
Well, that was a flat-out lie. He had been rehearsed in the days before trial repeatedly, and the prosecution had 74 pages of transcript at counsel table, which showed that.
Prosecutors, it turned out, had not only rehearsed the witness, but they made a transcript that showed them ridiculing Cook for not being able to keep his story straight. It wasn't until 19 years later, however, that the transcript finally was disclosed and turned over to defense lawyers. Prosecutors won't comment, leaving the Whiteheads as the spokesman for the way the case was tried.
There's going to be some little differences, because we don't ever tell the same story the same twice. You know, that's just natural. It's not as bad as they're trying to make out. I don't think that it was anything that was particularly done intentional or tried to cover up.
Mr. Whitehead similarly dismisses as insignificant the testimony of Robert Farr at the sentencing phase of the trial. Farr testified and later recanted that Banks had gone to Dallas to get his gun so he could commit more robberies and shoot more people. As important as the recantation, says defense lawyer Kendall, is the fact that Farr was asked directly whether he'd received any consideration for his testimony, and he said no. In fact, years later, Farr admitted he'd been paid $200 and threatened with prosecution for drug offenses if he didn't help the police. Farr and Cook were among five witnesses who eventually recanted their testimony. For the Whiteheads, those recantations, however, are not significant. The defense just wore people down, say the parents.
Why did it take them 20 years to do this? It's just that situation where they hound people, and then, you know, they finally give in and say, well, okay.
But defense lawyers say it took them close to two decades to find the witnesses who had moved to other states. And they point to the fact that Texas state courts held the appeal without action for a total of 8 years. Defense lawyer Kendall still contends there's a real possibility his client is innocent. The state's case, he notes, is based on the assertion that the murder occurred about 4 in the morning and that Banks then drove the victim's car to Dallas, arriving at about 8:30. But the forensic evidence from the autopsy, Kendall maintains, shows that Wayne Whitehead was probably killed 12 to 24 hours later, when everyone agrees that Delma Banks was in Dallas, nowhere near the scene of the crime in Texarkana. There is, however, a gun, and as Mr. Whitehead puts it,
Banks himself admitted that that was his gun, and that was the murder weapon.
Trouble is, when the state's expert witness testified that there was a match on the bullets, the defense lawyer at trial never asked about the basis for the match to see if the tests and comparisons were reliably done. Appellate lawyers say that wasn't the only failure by the defense lawyer, who was hired by Delma Banks' parents for $1,000 for the trial. In the years that followed the trial, other lawyers have taken over the case, and one of their contentions is that the trial counsel failed to do any of the basic things a defense lawyer is supposed to do at the penalty phase of a murder trial. He didn't investigate or present mitigating evidence about Delma Banks' background, the defendant's low IQ, evidence of brain damage, violence in the home. George Kendall.
These are facts that jurors, when they hear them, oftentimes say justifies a sentence of less than death. They were not searched for in this case. They were not presented to the jury.
And thus, Kendall argues that Banks was denied the effective assistance of a lawyer, something that the Supreme Court has said he is entitled to under the Constitution. For the judges and former prosecutors who have urged the Supreme Court to overturn both the death sentence and the conviction in this case, it's a textbook example of how not to handle a death case. Former federal judge John Gibbons.
The case is a perfect illustration of what is radically wrong with the death penalty system in the United States.
But for the parents of Wayne Whitehead, the case is a classic example of justice delayed is justice denied. Mr. and Mrs. Whitehead plan to be at today's Supreme Court argument, and they say they're prepared no matter what the outcome. Jackie Whitehead.
I decided I was just going to turn this over to a higher power. And whatever it turns out, it's the way it's supposed to turn out.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.